Let's begin today with a public service announcement. If you live in the late 1400s and your nation is going to war with the Aztecs, well, word to the wise, don't get captured. Really, just don't. Today, you're going to learn why, and then how that relates, more than you'd think, to the five questions you might want to ask yourself in order to discover, is your faith legit?
Welcome to the Sky Pilot Podcast that explores questions of faith, spirituality, and religion. I'm Dan Matthews, and I don't have all the answers, but I do enjoy the questions. Welcome to the podcast where every question is an invitation into a spiritual quest, and you're invited along for the journey.
Today, I'm going to give you five questions, and then at the end of the podcast, well, you know what? I'm going to add a bonus question that might be, yeah, it is, as important as the other five questions combined. So hang around to the end. So let's get started. If we are going to give five sample questions to evaluate the legitimacy of your faith, then what better place to begin? What more obvious place to begin than by traveling back in time to visit the Aztecs?
I'm not sure that I follow.
No, but you will. I promise. The ancient Aztec Empire existed from somewhere in the 1300s to the mid-1500s. When they were ultimately conquered by a combination of invading Spanish forces, the conquistadors, and the diseases brought to the Aztecs by those same invading Spanish forces. The Aztecs were a fascinating society. They didn't use money of any sort. Their entire financial system existed as a barter or exchange economy. And it was understood that the Aztec Empire owned everything, all the land. So people were allowed to farm and cultivate the land in exchange for taxes. Now, there's nothing really new here. But what's interesting to me is this tax was not so much a portion of their produce, as is usual in this kind of system, but instead was an expected amount of service or labor to be done for the empire each year as payment for the tax. The Aztecs were also very religious, and although there were a number of gods worshipped by the people of this nation, the empire itself primarily focused its attention and its worship on the sun god, Huitzilopochtli.
I bet you practiced that word a lot.
He was the god of war and is generally represented in their art as an eagle or hummingbird, often looking like a person actually dressed up as an eagle or a hummingbird. And he is also often depicted holding a snake, or technically a fire serpent. When the Spanish gave their justification for conquering the Aztecs, part of their reasoning was, well, religious. They saw the human sacrifices performed as a part of the Aztec religious rituals as being barbaric, and therefore they decided that the Aztecs needed to be conquered and brought into their faith. For a while, scholars wondered how accurate these reports actually were, but archaeologists have since confirmed that human sacrifice was indeed a significant part of the Aztec faith. Now, a little background. Their understanding of the world was that Huitzilopochtli, the sun god, was in constant battle, keeping the forces of chaos, and that's darkness, keeping the forces of darkness at bay. And what he fed upon, what kept him strong to do this important battle, well, was unfortunately beating human hearts. Humans were sacrificed and their hearts were offered to Huitzilopochtli as a means of keeping the chaos at bay. And so the Aztecs took this very seriously. Many of those sacrificed were prisoners who were taken captive in battle. But interestingly, some were actually voluntary sacrifices and were members of the Aztec society because it was considered a great honor and a sure and certain way to go directly to heaven. Now, I tell you this story because though I am generally not one to judge someone else's faith, I draw the line at religions that require human sacrifice as an essential part of their theology.
Oh, good. Then we're safe on that front, right?
Well, you would think so, right? But not so fast. I would argue that there are other forms of human sacrifice in which no blood is shed, but still causes human suffering. Some of the first questions that I'm going to ask, actually the first three questions I will ask, revolve around human sacrifice in one form or another. So let's jump into it. First question. Does your faith require growth and obedience from you as the person who practices the faith? Or instead, does it demand change from everyone else? I think there are plenty of faiths that sit in a theological ivory tower assuming, well, they have arrived. They are safe. They are holy. They're chosen. And now their existence, well, is primarily for the purpose of being God's chosen people who spend their time pointing out the iniquities of the world, the iniquities of everyone else. This form of faith is best summed up with the notion that I am righteous and I know it. You are unrighteous and seem to be oblivious to it. Good thing I'm here. My holy responsibility is to tell you how messed up you are and why you need to change. My first point here, with that first question, is that a healthy faith is chosen to inform and direct the life of the person who chose the faith, not everyone else. All right, question number two. Does your faith require someone else to lose in order for you to win? I'm reminded of the animated movie The Incredibles. In the movie, there is a family of superheroes with superpowers, and they are battling a supervillain named Syndrome, who's out to destroy all superheroes. Syndrome doesn't have any superpowers himself. Instead, he's a genius inventor, and at one point, he threatens to give his inventions to all people everywhere so that everyone will have superpowers.
I believe you just used the word super no less than 7 times in 20 seconds. That's averaging its use every 2 or 3 seconds. Absolutely amazing.
I wasn't aware. Thanks.
That was not a compliment.
Anyway, he plans on giving everyone his inventions so they can all have powers. That's pretty cool, right? But listen to his motivation in this audio clip.
And when I'm old and I've had my fun, I'll sell my inventions so that everyone can be superheroes. Everyone can be super. And when everyone's super, no one will be.
The diabolical motivation of his plan is that when everyone is super, no one will be. Being super, according to him, is only valuable if there are people who aren't, and that perfectly reflects the theology behind, well, at least a fairly sizable group within Christianity. Going to heaven, being saved, having the gifts that Jesus offers are only truly valuable if there are some people who don't get the gifts of God and are left to suffer. This is the allure of the whole Left Behind book and movie series, which were born out of an idea called premillennialism, an idea that Jesus will come back before the end times and he's going to scoop up, take all the good people directly to heaven and leave, well, everyone else behind to suffer the coming tribulations. So my second question is really this: does your faith require for some people to suffer, well, in order for you to receive the gifts of God? Third, do you define your faith by comparing it to other faiths? Look, if you're a Presbyterian or Baptist or Lutheran or Methodist or whatever it is, because that denomination, its beliefs and practices work for you, then more power to you. That's fantastic. But if you're a member of a denomination that spends a lot of time talking about other faiths and how you are right and they are wrong, then you don't so much believe something as you do dislike another denomination. I have known lots of Protestants who spent time talking about the errors of the Catholic faith more than what they believe. The sign of a healthy faith is that you believe what you believe because, get ready for this, it's helpful to you. And it informs your life choices, not because it wins in comparison to what your neighbor believes. All right, moving right along. Question number four. Is your faith comfortable with wondering and asking questions? Or are you expected to accept the theology as stated by your church, your worship group, without question? If you have listened to more than 2 episodes of this podcast, shoot, if you even listened to the intro of this podcast one time, then you know I'm really big on asking questions. Now, that doesn't mean your faith group redefines themselves every time someone asks a question, but a member should be allowed to wonder, question, and sometimes even doubt on the way to growing in their faith. All right, Final question. Question number 5. Is your faith motivated by fear or joy? Does your faith help you see a wonderful, creative, and loving Spirit of God at work in the world? Or is your faith teaching you to fear the reprisals of a vindictive God who wants to be followed, well, out of fear? As a Christian, and speaking from my personal reading of the Bible, if God was about judgment and punishment to be swiftly inflicted upon the sinful, that didn't take Jesus. God could have done that simply the way things stood. Now, when I read Scripture and the stories of Jesus, the incarnate form of God in our midst as humanity, then the only reason for that that makes any sense to me is to be sure humanity knows of God's love and God's holy, driven desire to be in relationship with us. I had a friend who lived next door to me in college. He was a very religious guy and would often jokingly say to me, truly as a joke, "Better change your ways, Dan, or you're going to wind up extra crispy." This is the perfect description of what I'm talking about. Does your faith tell you that all of creation is filled with signs of a wonderful, loving, generous God? Or does it tell you to straighten up, fly right, or wind up extra crispy? That's all. 5 questions right there that I hope help you evaluate your faith and perhaps move towards something that's more helpful and healthy for you. Oh, yeah, bonus question. And this one, as I said in the intro, is maybe as important as all the others combined. Here it is. Does your faith encourage you to make the world a better place for everyone? Not does it drive you to convert them to your faith and that will make the world a better place. No, does your faith help you, encourage you, give you direction towards making the world a better place for others? And this is the key. Even if those others have never heard of your faith, nor will ever practice the faith that you follow. That's all for today. So what do you think? Do you agree? Disagree? Do you think I missed an important question that should be added to this list? Let me know. You can send me an email or jump over to my YouTube channel and leave me a message below the video version of this episode. My email address is dan@skypilot.zone. As always, I would love to hear from you. And on your spiritual journey, may you ask questions, seek answers, and boldly go wherever the quest takes you. Thanks for joining us here today and being part of the Sky Pilot Faith Quest community. This is a great place to ask questions you wouldn't feel comfortable or safe asking in other places. And remember, the sign of a strong faith, solid religion, or healthy spiritual journey is not certainty, but that you keep asking questions.